If you thought it was tough for the General Assembly to craft a two-year state budget back in 2011, when thanks to the recession the state didn't have any money, fasten your seatbelt. This time around, the state does have a little something in the bank, but instead of making things easier, that financial cushion could make the 2013 session even more of a white-knuckle ride. We'll do our best to help you follow every twist and turn during this, the 32nd season of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm your host, John Schwanis, pleased to be back for a 17th year. We're also pleased to welcome our new partners at thestatehousefile.com at Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism. Here's Tim Grimes with an update on the General Assembly's first week.
The Indiana General Assembly kicked off the 2013 session Monday, ready to tackle a range of issues including education, healthcare, transportation, and many others. Lawmakers will write the budget for the next 2 years, and already Governor-elect Mike Pence has asked for a 10% cut in income taxes. But legislative leaders said they may have other priorities.
People and agencies and programs that have been cut are looking for renewing dollars or restoring dollars. And so a lot of people have been coming, asking, requesting that they be looked at for increases.
John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, also said a Medicaid expansion offered by the federal government will compete for money in the budget.
We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, and whether or not that gets added to the pot during the legislature when, again, we have that competition for dollars is something that remains to be seen.
Lawmakers are scheduled to work through April 29th. If they don't get the budget written by then, they may need a special session to get the job done. For Indiana lawmakers and thestatehousefile.com, I'm Tim Grimes.
In a moment, we'll sit down with the leaders of the General Assembly's four legislative caucuses. So stay with us as Indiana Lawmakers brings you another season of legislative news and information from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies. 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
As I suggested at the outset of the program, the only thing trickier than putting together a two-year state budget when you don't have any money is putting together a two-year state budget when you do have a little bit of money. 2 years of budget cutting left Indiana with a sizable surplus, and according to the official state forecast issued last month, lawmakers might have an extra $1 billion or so in tax revenues to work with this biennium. The challenge, each of the General Assembly's 150 members probably has a slightly different take on how that money should or shouldn't be spent. Joining me to talk about this year's budget process and a whole bunch of other potentially explosive topics are House Speaker Brian Bosma, a Republican from Indianapolis, House Minority Leader Scott Pilath, a Democrat from Michigan City, Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Republican from Fort Wayne, and Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon, a Democrat from Anderson. And I thank you all for being here, gentlemen, to kick off our new season of Indiana Lawmakers.
Thanks, John.
Indulge me. I made a list here. Let's see if I covered everything. Number one, the always contentious budget process. Number two, the loss through retirement of the House Ways and Means Committee's two most senior members, 80 years of combined experience. A new face in the governor's office, first time in 8 years. In the agenda that goes with that, 29 freshman lawmakers. And number five, the first one-party supermajority in both chambers since I was a year old. And as you can tell looking at me, that was a long time ago. Brian Bosma, which of those factors promises to weigh most heavily on this session?
So this goes back clear to the 50s? I didn't realize that.
Touche.
Well,
remember,
I'm
the one asking the questions. You may regret that.
It's a year of transition. There's no doubt about that. And there will be big issues that are dealt with, important challenges before us. The case of workforce development, I think, is something we all agree on, that we have to match unemployed folks with the jobs that are available and those who are coming through their training today. But it is a transition time. It's a time for a new governor. For the first time in 8 years, we're all kind of feeling out where he is and his team, and a lot of new faces in the General Assembly in both houses, on both sides of the aisle, and that's good. It's exciting. It brings a lot of energy into the building.
Now, as far as the supermajority, which again is simply means that you now have what your counterpart, your colleague to your left, has enjoyed in the past, which is a two-thirds majority, supermajority. You can conduct business, pass bills without any input, not that I'm suggesting you will. But you can do it without them stopping the process. Is that a help or a hindrance to you? What kind of additional burden does it put on you as a speaker, because it is a big group when you're trying to herd that many individuals.
Well, some have suggested that there'll be hard shifts to the right or left, and you know, I've responded, there's a steady hand on the wheel here.
I don't
here.
Think many people have suggested there'll be hard shifts to the left.
I missed that. Yanking the wheel to the right.
I missed that one.
One direction or the other, let's say that. But I've said publicly, and I sincerely mean it, that having a large majority may require more outreach, more bipartisanship, than just having a squeaker and kind of making it happen. So Representative Pilath and I have already done some things that haven't happened before jointly, reaching out to our new members, reaching out to each other, trying to keep the lines of communication open. And we both know we're not going to agree on everything, but we're going to be civil about it. I'd be gentleman about it, honorable about it, and that's my pledge, and that's his pledge as well.
Well, and Scott Pilath, you took over your leadership role here last fall, so you've mm-hmm. never had the opportunity, even though you've been in the General Assembly, to be on the minority end of a supermajority. Does that worry you? You're hearing things about inclusion, about working through the process, but that must be some alarm bells here somewhere.
There's opportunities. Sometimes there's opportunities to do things better. You know, Speaker Bosma, Senator Long, they have very, very difficult jobs, because when you have two-thirds of the seats, it's easy to think that you have two-thirds of the people agreeing with you. And I think they know that's not the case. The minority has to help. We have to help when it's for the good of the state. But we have a very important role in critiquing the work of the majority and providing alternatives. And it's an opportunity for House Democrats, and I think for Senate Democrats, too, to do those things. And if anything comes out of this, I think we can have a more principled debate that's focused on values, real differences that people have, and what they think is most important and what they want their lives to be about. And we have to, you know, God sends us these numbers and God, and the voters, and we have to look at best use what's been presented to us by the voters to make it a better state.
Well, Senator, they're looking forward to what's happening. You've lived it in the past.
Awful as lot a of love being
supermajority. There is. I mean, join hands? Can you confirm that it's going to be the love fest that they're suggesting? Or again, you've been running a supermajority now in the past. Is that a wrinkle that does complicate things a little bit?
Well, and I hope Tim will agree with me. I think one of the things that I've tried always to instill, and I think I took from my predecessor, is, you know, the Senate tries to manage itself with a sense of decorum and respect, and I think we've always managed to do that, and we've had varying numbers in there over the years. It currently is more in our favor than it has been in the past, but nevertheless, we respect our colleagues. When they want to caucus, you know, we don't say, well, you only have 20 minutes. I mean, we give them the time they need. I collaborated with Vice Simpson, and of course, well, with Tim. Tim Lane and I have kind of grown up in the Senate together. We know each other. We're friends. He will be a tough adversary in the chamber, no question about it. Well spoken, and yet we'll persevere and we'll move the ball forward for the state of Indiana, no question about it.
I think you all have read the polls about Congress and partisan rancor and how
this is not this is not Washington though, and we've still managed to be able to get along once we shut down for business in the state, and I think that's a very important difference and something I think we're proud of and we intend to maintain.
Certainly that is the tone we've seen this week, Tim Lannon, and I know on Organization Day you sat down to tape a message to your constituents and Hoosiers more broadly, and you said, you know, you can count on Democrats to be there in the debate, which is so important to the process. But I guess the crass question is, how do you guarantee you're going to be part of the debate if you can leave the floor and the debate goes on without you? I mean, well, how is it all just depend on everybody playing nice together?
I don't think we have any intentions of leaving the floor. We're going to
Wouldn't do any good. So,
no. Why would we do that? So, to the contrary, we intend on being right in the thick of the debate. And I think the public expects there to be debate. I think David's exactly right. There is a healthy respect for each side of the aisle in the Indiana Senate. There always has been. And I think maybe the only challenge, if you have a supermajority, is can you maintain that respect for the rights of the minority to participate in a meaningful fashion? You're absolutely right, John. The one message I hear from constituents is whatever you do, down at the Indiana General Assembly, don't act like the United States Congress. Try to work together to get things done. That doesn't mean they don't expect us to have a healthy debate over all the issues. there should be that, because these are important issues. They need to be thoroughly vetted and discussed. And I think we've had sort of a tradition in history in the Indiana Senate of doing that. And, you know, I would hope that that would continue. I expect it to continue. And as David said, we have a long relationship, and I think that will be the case.
And you have one thing going for you, maybe the Congress doesn't, which is, if I recall the Indiana Constitution correctly, you don't have the ability to raise the budget ceiling or debt ceiling. You've got to get a budget one way or another. So that sort of has a way, I guess, of coalescing thought at the end.
I just want to add one thing to this. This isn't because we've read polls. There's a lot more cooperation that's happened behind the scenes in the General Assembly for generations, not just, you know, since folks here have been there. And the ones that, because of the difficulty of the last couple of years and some of the tactics that were used that not everybody agreed with, even the participants, I think people think, oh my gosh, it's a free-for-all. It isn't. Every bill last year, with the exception of one, had Republicans and Democrats voting yes on it in the House. So we agree on a lot more than that.
Let me ask you, though. I wasn't going to go down this path, and I do want to talk about the budget and some of the actual issues, but you raised the question with this notion of cooperation. You look at the freshman class, not so much this year, but certainly the one prior. There were a lot of very hardcore, if you want to say, individuals in your caucus. I mean, and the conventional wisdom, certainly last session and session prior, was there maybe isn't as much cooperation. But you're saying those are mischaracterizations or misinterpretations.
Well, Leader Pilath and I met with the 25 new members of the House yesterday, and part of our message was the opportunity to change the tone really exists when 25% of the workforce, if you will, turns over. So we've challenged them. And again, I'm not saying it's going to be a love fest. We're not going to agree on every issue. We know that. But we can do it as ladies and gentlemen, and we can talk about policy, not just politics. We can talk about ideas and not personalities. Right. What's happened?
And the goal for the institution is always to condense debates, I think, down to value judgments, because people value fundamentally three things. They value freedom, they value order, and they value equality. And every human being values those in a little bit different proportion. And it's our job to be reflective of that. And if you get debates focused on what's most important to us, then you say, let's vote.
Well, let's talk about some of those issues, and we'll start with the budget. That's the one thing we mentioned you have to do. I could ask you a lot of detailed questions, but I guess, is it fair to say that any discussion we have now is almost irrelevant, because until we see the revised forecast, revenue forecast in April, won't it be largely a waiting game? I should probably start with you, since the budget starts in the
House. It'll be more than a waiting game. I mean, the details and how much you can spend really won't be determined until that final forecast comes out in April. But a lot of work is going to happen between now and then. The budget, the $28-29 billion budget, is the single largest policy document that we deal with, and there's a lot of values placed in there. The priorities of education, the priorities of social services, all these things come together in the budget. So a lot of work is going to be there. You mentioned we have two new folks in the House leading the team. It's okay. They're experienced, steady hands at the wheel, and it's going to be an interesting process.
But can I say, I think we've got a real opportunity with the budget, too, in that, as you say, Brian, the budget is the major policy statement of the Indiana General Assembly. I think one of the things that we really need to focus in and that we could put some resources into would be workforce development. It would be, how do we address the skills gap that exists in the state of Indiana? And this is an opportunity for us, I think, certainly more than in the past budget cycles that we've had, to say, how could we really advance Indiana forward, at this time, and keep us competitive, make us even more competitive in terms of attracting jobs and businesses.
I want to say, too, there's you mentioned waiting a little bit. There's one thing we're still waiting on, and that's Governor-elect Pence.
Yes.
He's presumably going to want to have a say in what these things are all about.
Yeah.
He campaigned on the issue of an income tax.
You read my mind.
Okay,
that was
so that's
my next question, right?
We want to hear what shape that's going to take. I presume it's going to get a respectful hearing from the majority leaders in both houses. But he's going to have a State of the State coming up, and maybe we're going to have to take into consideration some things that he wants.
State of the State on the 22nd of the month, which, of course, he doesn't get inaugurated until the 14th. I guess we can start badgering him with the tough questions on the 15th, right? But even if I cut my ear and listen really hard here, I haven't heard any discussion except from the suggestion that a tax cut of 10% as proposed by the governor-elect isn't maybe the necessarily good thing. We've also heard and read, of course, comments from both of you in leadership positions in the House and Senate saying, we're not going to just go embrace that proposal out of the gate. There are concerns, right, about spending those
dollars. Of course there are. I mean, there are pressures on our revenue sources, and we don't have to tick them all off too many, but we don't know where the economy is going right now. A lot of people are concerned about what's going on in Washington, that it might kill the recovery. We'll see. We don't know. We don't know what's going on globally yet. Any kind of a hiccup in the economy can turn us in a different direction. We're in a sensitive time right now, and for anyone to predict or say, I've got the crystal ball that tells you here's where we'll be and therefore we can do this, isn't being completely straight. You know, the governor-elect, Mike Pence, has made a pledge. It's what he'd like to do. He believes it will stimulate the economy, and that's what his goal is. Whether that's the way or there are other ways to do it, I know that's what his goal is, and that's his stated purpose, and it's a good goal, all right? But whether we can do it through a tax cut or not remains to be seen. The April revenue forecast, which should be, second week of April, will be very important in determining that as well as other things, such as how much can we spend in the next biennium. And that's our telescope there. And it's got to be done right, and we have to be very cautious about that. We've worked very hard to get a balanced budget in this state and to establish the precedent of living within your means. Mm-hmm. We're not going to deviate from that. And so ultimately, we've got a few months before we can say definitively what we're going to do in the budget. And that's just the way it has to be.
And there are several fluctuations, I should say, in addition to just economic factors. We have Medicaid spending, and with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act at the federal level, I think a lot of questions are out there about how many Hoosiers, what the figure, 92,000 people who are currently qualified but are not on the program are likely to join the rolls. Right. So I guess we could debate that. Another factor is the revenue stream that the gaming industry
Absolutely.
Has provided, which has become so important. It's not just a luxury anymore.
Right.
Something about that, living in an area that's benefited from gaming revenues. We have competition now, increased competition, Cleveland, Toledo, Columbus. March 4th, we see a casino opening in Cincinnati. What can you do to shore up that revenue stream?
Well, look, we have to keep our gaming establishments competitive. We've gone down this road before. We've made the decision that gaming is going to be an important part of our state's revenue stream. We have to live with that, and we have to make it work. And we can't forget, too, that those casinos employ an awful lot of people. In my own community, it's the biggest private employer. And that's important. Those are people that earn fair wages at good jobs that they used to spend at other businesses to support them. So we have to be realistic about that. But that it's complicated, too, by the general revenue picture. And this way I say I genuinely have empathy for the leaders of both houses here, because he had Governor Pence. I don't remember a lot of things he talked about in the campaign, but I do remember that.
Right.
And I think it's going to be tough to tell him after he was elected that he can't have at least some of his marquee pledge to the voters.
Well, look, I just looked at some charts yesterday, and in 1990, I know we've been here before, 1998, $2 billion structural surplus. By 2004, the year that I became Speaker of the House for the first time, we had a $1.4 billion hole to fill. So whatever we do, it has to be sustainable.
Right.
It has to have a long-term vision to it, and not just and I don't mean this in a bad way. Respect Governor Pence very much.
Yeah.
We can't just be to fulfill a campaign pledge. Right. We got to do it.
Right.
I want him to be successful. I want him to succeed, but we must make smart fiscal decisions here that go beyond a campaign cycle, that are for long-term for Hoosiers are smart.
Yeah, and when Tim brought up the point about workforce development and education and their needs as well.
Yes.
We put a lot of reforms in place in the last couple of years. K through 12 schools, we're going to have.
And are those going to stay in place, superintendent?
Well, yes, they will. The legislature controls that decision.
Right.
But
there will be pressure clearly from.
Oh, clearly, and she'll have some agendas, and she'll be trying to push those. Sure.
And we made tax cut pledges that are still being implemented now.
That's right. And so, but just on the education front, Brian's right. There are other things as well we've done. We have some responsibilities there as well, and we need to make sure that as these reforms go into place, that we're helping the schools the way we need to with the right revenues and whatnot, whether it's remediation or any of these things that have to be done to make sure that we're getting the outcomes we want through the schools. And that means we've got to focus on those things as well. So the whole issue about what we can or can't do, again, if it's a great, robust spring and we're looking great and the economy is just suddenly booming, then we can talk about that absolutely in very positive ways. If it's not, we got to take a really hard look at it. And I know Governor-elect Pence understands that. He understandably wants to fulfill a promise he felt he made, but we're just going to have to see what comes. He can't control that, and neither can we. Okay?
We talk most about fiscal policy issues, as we should. That's what you have to do. But just as the session itself, other issues are lingering out there, are likely to intrude. We only have a minute or two. Yeah. I know, and I'm going to let you talk, Tim Lennon, because I think we shortchanged you on time. But your colleague here to your left issued a call this week for a two-year moratorium on social issues so that ostensibly people could focus on these very issues. How concerned are you that this talk, we've spent the past 15 minutes talking about money issues, will give way to
gay marriage and school prayer?
And,
we need a session where we really focus in on what people think are important for the state of Indiana. And that's job creation, that's quality education, that's protecting the most vulnerable members of our society, whether it's children or seniors. And some of these other issues, they definitely are hot button issues. They can tend to be divisive, get people off track. I think it would be well for us to steer clear of those, or certainly to be very judicious about where we are as a state right now and where is the state headed in the future and what do people really think are important. So I hope we can stay with
anything wrong with the idea. I know we got to wrap up here, but Mitch Daniels called for something like that on a federal level a few years ago, got some heat from members of his own party.
Well, it's a matter of priority. We're going to focus on the budget, job creation, workforce, education, but probably contrary to most Hoosiers' opinions, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And there'll be a small amount of time spent on some of these issues. It won't be an overarching theme. I appreciated the call, but I'm sure there might be some social issues that Representative Pilath and his team might think would be good for discussion, too. And we're elected officials. We're here to deal with the state's issues, and those are among them.
And to correct the record, because we are about truth and honesty, the last dual supermajority wasn't in the 1950s. I know you're ribbing me. 1964, otherwise known as 6 years before this guy was born. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Brian Bosma, an Indianapolis Republican, House Minority Leader Scott Pilath, a Michigan City Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem David Long, a Fort Wayne Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon, an Anderson Democrat. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we'll preview the State of the State address with Indiana's new governor, Mike Pence. And time now for one of my favorite parts of Indiana Lawmakers, our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, and our resident political analyst for the past 17 years.
And this is my favorite part of your show, John.
That's why we keep bringing you back, because you say things like that. Well, it took a while to move the chairs over here because there was so much sugar and syrup from the love fest that took place during the roundtable. Were you surprised at the tone? I mean, granted, it is early, but this does seem to be at least a lot of talk about collegiality and bipartisanship.
This is not 2012. Think back a year ago, and things were a lot different than they are today. A year ago, there was a lot of tension, a lot of dissension. The parties, the leaders were not getting along at all, and this year, it's an entirely different system and prospect.
And explain to me why. Is it they're reading the tea leaves about frustrations on the part of constituents and voters, or is it the personalities of the people who are in leadership positions? Is it something as simple as that?
It's a little bit of everything. We've had an election. The people have spoken. We've had a supermajority in both chambers elected on the Republican side. We've also gotten some of the more divisive issues off the agenda in 2012, the things that really got both parties upset at each other and kind of divided the chambers and the legislature and the governor. So we're not going to see that so much in 2013, and that's the big reason why things are a lot more at ease today.
There does seem to be a willingness on the part of leadership on both sides of the aisle to say everybody's going to get a hearing, but that hearing may be with an assignment of a bill to the Rules Committee, which we all know is sort of the legislative
but the interesting thing, John,
cemetery. Is this a conscious effort to really keep those things out of play?
Yeah, and absolutely. And interestingly enough, a lot of those bills that have already gone, for example, to the Senate Rules Committee are Republican bills that were kind of a little bit perhaps beyond the reach of the receivers, you might say. There were some bills that may have tried to outkick the coverage. I think Senator Long has taken that view and put those in there so that they may not see the light of day and may not have to cross over to the House, where last year Speaker Bosma had to kind of put his foot down and say, no, we're not going to deal with those. And those are the kinds of things that will make this session a little bit easier to deal with. But at the same time, it also shows that all is not rosy within the ranks of the supermajority parties in both chambers.
So if we have the two lovebirds at the table now, the R's and D's in the legislature, we bring in the third party, which is the governor's office, do we keep things on the same level, or is that when things start to get a little interesting?
Well, there's always tension between the legislature and the executive branch. It's never, the sugar and spice relationship that you referred to. And there are some things that the legislature differs with the incoming governor on, and I think that's going to be a big thing. We're going to have to watch to see how much that relationship is affected by a legislative decision not to necessarily go along with this tax cut.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch. Thanks, Ed. We'll look forward to sitting down with you again next week. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And don't forget, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity and Bright House Network. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. For WFYI and thestatehousefile.com, I'm John Schwanis. We're back next week. Take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.